And welcome to The Menu, Monocle's show on food, drink and hospitality. I am Marcus Hippie. In the next half an hour, we recap the top recipes and food tours we heard in 2020. We'll be in Sao Paulo, Cork and Murmansk before we continue with recipes from some of the world's best chefs, including Samin Nosrat, Olia Hercules and Santiago Lastra. So stay tuned. All that is ahead in the next 30 minutes here on Monocle 24. We start in a rather warm destination. Almost a year ago, my colleague Fernando Augusto Pacheco was back from a trip back home. Here is his brief guide to his favorite places in Sao Paulo.
Ah, São Paulo. It's always the most magical time of the year for me, my yearly trip back to my hometown. And every time I go back, I make sure to update my list of restaurants to visit. And of course, revisit some old favorites. Talking about old favorites, I finally decided to go back to Mercado Municipal, the iconic food market in the city. It was opened in 1933, and among its main offers is the incredible pastel de bacalhau, codfish pastry. It's one of the best pastries I ever eaten. Try it and you'll see why it's worth to join, you know, the quite big queue to get one. Mercado Municipal is nice, but its crowdedness can be a bit daunting at times. For a change of pace, one of my main recommendations to eat and visit in São Paulo is Vista, which means view in English. If you go there, you understand why they chose that name. Located in the 8th floor in the same building of São Paulo's Modern Art Museum, there's an incredible view of the city. It overviews the city's biggest park, Parque Ibirapuera. Besides the excellent Brazilian food by chef Marcelo Correia Bastos, situated by the restaurant is the bar Obelisco, with live music, excellent cocktails, one of the best Moscow meals I ever had. São Paulo also does Italian very well. The chic and understated Piselli in Jardins is another one I discovered on this trip, even though it's been open for the last 15 years. Good wine, impeccable service, it works in a city with a strong competition of great Italian eateries. For another good favorite, I absolutely love the Lebanese chain Almanara. Don't be scared that it's a chain. The cuisine is superb. Esfihas and kibbe cru, raw kibbe, are always my choice. Brazilians know how to do Lebanese food well. And it wouldn't be a good trip to Brazil if it wasn't the small delicacies around the city. If you enjoy bread, sweets, the city has an excellent offer of little snacks. In the shopping center JK Iguatemi, you can buy excellent traditional Brazilian biscuits at Biscoité, worth bringing to your loved ones abroad. And then head to Casa Santa Luzia for an amazing offer of Brazilian goods. It's my supermarket of choice when in São Paulo. There's simply too much of everything. Worth booking some of the places mentioned here. I'll see you next year, São Paulo. I'll be sure to check out your latest gastronomic wonders. For Monocle, I'm Fernando Augusto Pacheco.
Thanks to Fernando for that. We continue from one extreme to another as our next food neighborhood tour takes us to Murmansk, the largest city in the Arctic Circle. Monocle's Theo Mertz is our guide to the local cuisine, which in spite of the harsh conditions is bursting with flavor.
If you're choosing a restaurant now in London, Paris or Berlin, what factors are you basing your choice on? Maybe it's the quality of the food, maybe it's the prices, maybe it's the atmosphere. And most of the time, it's a combination of the three. What you're probably not thinking about is whether the food is going to help you to survive the winter. But things are a little different in Murmansk, a Russian port that's the biggest city in the Arctic Circle. In January, I travelled to Murmansk from my home in Moscow, to write an article about how the 300,000 people who live there make it through the polar night. The city, in the west of Russia, about 100 miles from the border with Norway, is so far north that for 40 days in the winter, it has no direct sunlight at all. It's not completely black. When the sun comes close to the horizon, there is a pre-dawn light and then a sunset light for a few hours. But the darkness, nevertheless, takes its toll on the locals. When I asked people about how they got through this period, I expected to hear about seasonally affective disorder lamps, the importance of trying to stay positive, the importance of exercise, or maybe how a little bit of vodka could take the edge off. What I didn't expect was there to be quite so much focus on food as a way of combating the winter blues. And I really didn't expect that much of the food on offer would be so good. My culinary journey began on the 36-hour sleeper train up from Moscow. There are flights that take just over 2 hours, but if you're making the trip to Murmansk to see some of the stunning Arctic landscapes around the city, or perhaps catch a glimpse of the northern lights, it's certainly worth going the slow way. Not least for the locals who come to sell their wares on platforms as you approach the Arctic Circle, offering cartons of berries, homemade jams and pies. On the second evening, the photographer I was travelling with picked up a smoked whitefish for our dinner, a meaty, oily northern fish that's similar to salmon. The smell didn't make us too popular with our fellow travellers, but it was delicious. Once we arrived in Murmansk, we set out for a swim with what Russians call walruses, people who jump through holes in frozen over lakes and swear that the icy dip is what keeps them going through the winter. I asked one of them, Alexander, whether he took any supplements for his diet. No, he laughed. You get everything you need from fish, especially herring and the cod for which Murmansk is famous in the rest of Russia. Alexander catches his own cod, but there's no need to do this yourself. Instead, head to Tundra, the city's most fashionable restaurant. Here, Murmansk cod is served with a side of crabbed mashed potatoes, or there are salmon steaks, which the locals swear are tastier than their Norwegian cousins. There's a rich potato soup with local scallops, or there's giant crab, which Tundra insists is imported from the far east of Russia, as it's illegal to catch them here for environmental reasons. Desserts are heavy on local berries, and there are also berry-infused teas. The walls are decorated with dried moss in a nod to the rustic menu. If you're after something meatier, try a restaurant called Sarskaya Ohota, or The Royal Hunt, that's owned by the same people as Tundra. This one's a little bit kitschier, with Russian folk decorations and furs hanging over wooden beams. There's fish here too, but there are also several variations on reindeer on the Arctic-themed menu. Strips of meat served with celery mash, or a reindeer heart on a bed of blueberry sauce. In terms of local booze, there are flavoured spirits called nastoyki, or a vodka-like liquor called polugar. For something sweet, try a cafe called Maroshki, named after the Arctic fruit that in English is called cloudberry. The cafe's just behind the city's main drag, Lenin Avenue, and there are plenty of good pastries here. But the highlight has to be pancakes with sour cream and cloudberry jam. The fruit looks like an orange raspberry, and in terms of taste, it's a little bit like a cross between a raspberry and a gooseberry. You can find it brewed in teas in Murmansk too. If, after all of this, you're still feeling the dark, head to the best-lit restaurant in town, the world's northernmost McDonald's. Unfortunately, there's no reindeer burger or cloudberry McFlurry, but there is a little plaque next to the counter that testifies to the outlet's distinction. If you do order here, remember, it's medicinal. According to local doctors, fatty, comforting, bright foods are the best way to make it through the polar night. For Monocle in Murmansk, I'm Theo Mertz.
Up next, we head to Western Europe. Back in March, Monocle's Charlie German took us through the rich and varied culinary delights on offer in Cork, Ireland's second city.
In the southwest of Ireland and on the banks of the River Lee, Cork, or as the locals refer to it, the real capital, is a true culinary hotspot. First place to visit is a Cork institution, the iconic English Market, bang in the city centre, a bustling Victorian-covered marketplace packed full of artisans trading products from the local to the international. Manoeuvre your way under the barrel-vaulted ceilings the Alternative Bread Company and pick up a loaf of traditional Irish buttermilk soda bread. Loaf under your arm, wander over to O'Connell's Fishmongers, which offers freshly caught fish arriving daily from Castletown Bear in West Cork. Get yourself a slice of the very popular oak smoked salmon to pair with your bread. Even Queen Elizabeth herself visited the marketplace during a state visit in 2011. Pat O'Connell, the fishmonger, welcomed the Queen and pointed at a monkfish. He said it resembled his mother-in-law. The Queen laughed uproariously. Across a few stalls to O'Reilly & Sons Butchers, established in 1910. Here get a good serving of tripe, drisheen and crabeen, some offal hors d'oeuvres to chew with relish. Tripe is the stomach lining of a sheep or cow, drisheen a variety of blood pudding, and crabeen are pig trotters, all famous in the market due to its long-standing history of providing salted beef and pork to sailors circumnavigating the globe, departing from the coastal harbour of Cove. Exit the English market and amble along to the Michelin-starred Itchy Gutchy on Fenn's Quay. Patrons sit on stools or at the counter and observe the chef, Takeshi Miyasaki, at work in the open kitchen. Experience Japanese haute cuisine fused with local ingredients. In fact, Miyasaki uses local English market crabeens to make his tonkotsu dishes. The menu offers items that are grilled, steamed, pickled, stewed, in rice, soup and sashimi, all reflecting the seasons. Sample the spring dishes, pickled iwashimisu with sardine, rhubarb wakame and shiso tozazu. Crunch on a canny cream croquette with Castletown Bear crab and yuzu koji mayonnaise, and perhaps knock back a sake. A man in Tokyo once told me to never drink hot sake, as it will give you a roaring hangover. He continued to confidently say that drinking it ice cold under no circumstance would give you a hangover. From experience, I can categorically confirm this is untrue. After a succulent meal of Japanese cuisine, check out Alchemy Coffee and Books on Barrack Street. They use 3FE independent Irish coffee roasters. I promise a sip of the coffee in Alchemy will make the drinker release an audible ah in pleasure. The cafe has used books to flick through, alternating art exhibitions from local artists decorate the walls, and all of this adds the creative and relaxing ambience. For dinner, look no further than Paradiso, an internationally acclaimed vegetarian restaurant. Known for its innovative menu, Paradiso uses local ingredients for an international taste. Braised turnip, sprouting broccoli and chili-glazed pan-fried tofu with pak choi are some of the highlights on the diverse, locally sourced menu. Even for the most carnivorous of meat eaters, this vegetarian gem is a culinary highlight of the city. After such a gastronomic odyssey, a final calling to the Abbey Tavern is much needed. On the way to the pub, take a postprandial stroll through University College Cork and admire the neo-Gothic quadrangle and cloisters. Now, for an evening stout digestif in the Abbey Tavern, a pint of Murphy's, referred to me once as the glorious mud of the River Lee. Make sure to bring along a copy of Night Boat to Tangier by Kevin Barry, long listed for the Booker Prize last year. This very pub features in the book and gives the reader great insight into the colloquialisms, the lyrical accents, and the culture of this great city. Wind down the evening in a snug, crack open a bag of cheese and onion crisps, and hopefully you'll be treated to a boisterous sing-song as the night rolls on and on. For Monocle, I'm Charlie German.
Thanks to Charlie for his culinary guide to Cork. You are listening to The Menu on Monocle 24. We continue with some of the best recipes from 2020 after a short break. Stay tuned.
Keen for a quick tutorial on where you should take your business over the coming months?
The really brilliant products are brilliant, not because of a marketing campaign or it's because they've managed to get some incredible ambassador. They really are good because they add value.
Interested to learn how one of the world's biggest pharma companies responded to the pandemic?
We need what's called warm preparedness. So we need public health systems that have the supplies ready, at least for the initial phase of a pandemic.
Curious about the future of air travel?
Everybody's looking forward to connect with the world. connect with friends around the world and just spend some leisure time and some relaxing time abroad.
Or wondering whether shops will still matter.
There's thousands of different journeys through the store that anyone who walks in could take.
From CEOs to editors-in-chief, CMOs to chief strategy officers, our series is a fast-paced, intimate discussion with chiefs, big and small, from around the world. That's The Chiefs, right here on Monocle 24, or wherever you find finer podcasts.
Welcome back. You are listening to The Menu on Monocle 24. In this episode, we recap some of the best bits from food neighborhoods in 2020. When COVID-19 hit the world, we changed the format of the program to focus on recipes, considering that most of us found ourselves spending more time at home. And what a lineup of top chefs we have had. So let's get started. Back in April, we heard from the chef, author and broadcaster Samin Nosrat.
My name is Samin Nosrat, and my recipe recommendation is ricotta toast with cherry tomato confit. So first you get a nice big thick slice of rustic bread and brush it with oil and toast it or grill it until it's really nice and crisp on the outside. And then I take some fresh ricotta, either sheep's milk or cow's milk, that I've seasoned with black pepper and salt and olive oil, and smear a really nice, generous dollop of that on it. And then I'll put these confit cherry tomatoes. They're so simple to make. You just dump a basket of cherry tomatoes, maybe like either a half kilo or a kilo of cherry tomatoes, in a roasting dish, and you nearly submerge them with olive oil, a few basil leaves, a few garlic cloves, and you just cook that really slow for about 35 minutes until they're barely bursting apart. They should still look like cherry tomatoes, not broken down, but if you touch them, they'll explode. They're so amazing. And I just drizzle those all over the ricotta toast when they're warm and delicious, and put a whole bunch of basil on top and some beautiful flaky Maldon salt, and call it a day. That's like the best lunch ever.
Samin Nosrat there. Well, here in London, Mexican top chef Santiago Lastra opened his restaurant Call just a couple of months ago. He also shared one of his recipes with us.
My name is Santiago Lastra. I'm a Mexican chef, and I'm just about to open my restaurant Call in Marylebone in the 20th of October. And the recipe that we are doing today is a little bit of a evening kind of snack that are called molletes, really traditional from Mexico, really simple as well. So what you do is you take a piece of toast, you can even just toast it in the toaster or in the oven or in a pan. You can use sourdough bread if you want, or like a normal bread from the day before, and just toast it with some butter, and then you're gonna add some beans. It's important that you blend the beans with a little bit of chipotle chili, fry them in butter, and then spread this tasty paste on top of the toast. Then on top you're gonna put some cheese, whatever you like. I like to use Emmental cheese. You can use that or you can use manchego, and then bake it in the oven, sprinkle some crispy chorizo on top, and finish with some pico de gallo. That it's a really, really simple sauce that is made with just diced tomatoes, diced onions, and diced jalapenos with a tiny bit of coriander. Mix it, put maybe a little bit of salt, put it on top, squeeze some lime, and enjoy.
Thanks to Santiago Lastra. You are listening to The Menu on Monocle 24. Let's next hear a recipe from Ukraine.
Hi, my name is Olia Hercules. I am a chef and author from Ukraine, and I live in London. One of my favorite Ukrainian recipes that I found in a 1905 Ukrainian cookbook is burnt aubergine on toast with tomatoes and garlic. And it's a very easy one to prepare. Just grab a couple of aubergines. If you can cook them over a barbecue, all for the better. But also you can blister them over a stove or in the oven until they're really nicely soft. You take the skin off. Don't worry if a little bit of skin remains on it. It all adds to flavor. And then while the aubergine is still warm, you just mash it with a fork and then add a knob of really good butter. So they kind of become buttery aubergines. Is just such a beautiful thing. And then the way that you assemble this dish is you take a piece of really good bread and you toast it, or even you can fry it as well or grill it, and then take a little bit of garlic, cut it in half and rub it all over the edges of the toast, and then take a really nice and ripe tomato and almost do what the Spanish do with pan con tomate. So you just rub the tomato over the toast and then top with your buttery aubergine. It's one of my top recipes this summer for sure.
Thanks to Olia Hercules. Now, Ralph Schelling is a regular guest on Monocle 24, and you can also read his recipes on our weekend edition email newsletter. But now, here is a radio version of one of his favorite recipes.
Hi everyone, my name is Ralph Schelling, Swiss chef, and here I'm gonna show you one of my best recipes for this season. It's actually my mother's recipe, and it's called cinnamon swirls with apple. And I'm gonna use unripe apples, which are super full of vitamin C, super juicy and super tasty. And yeah, it's like a vitamin bomb, and it's super tasty for those hot summer days. So what I'm gonna do is I make a nice yeast dough using fresh yeast, flour, a bit of butter, milk. But you can actually also buy like a nice puff pastry or something similar. Roll it out and then fill it up with a mixture of apples, as I explained, like unripe apple, which are not sweet like what they get in about 1-2 months. But use the local apples right now, full of vitamin C. Grate them and mix them up with some grounded almonds or hazelnuts, and put a little bit of sugar in it and a bit of coffee cream. That's a secret of my mom. Put it on the dough and then roll it up and cut it into nice pieces and bake that in the oven. And then at the end, the glaze is like made of also unripe apple juice, or you can use lime juice, lemon juice, whatever. Put a bit of icing sugar in it and then cover it, the apple cinnamon buns, with it, and enjoy.
Thanks to Ralph. And finally, a recipe by one of Sweden's top chefs.
I'm Niklas Ekstedt. I'm a chef and restaurateur in Stockholm, and I run a small little restaurant in the very, very center of Stockholm called Ekstedt's. So it's after my second name, so easy. I've chosen this recipe because it's very close to my heart, and it's something that I very much love, and it's herring. When I was a kid growing up, we always had herring once a week, and it was usually something we had in the end of the week, like a Friday or Thursday. And in Sweden, we also always eat herring as a starter for big celebrations. If it's for Midsummer, Christmas, or Easter, it's always herring and fresh potatoes or small young potatoes. This one I've chosen because it has a very personal touch to it. So it's a hot smoked herring. And when I hot smoke stuff, it's a higher temperature. I always use birch. But you could do this with other things as well. So imagine yourself that you're hot smoking in your regular barbecue. It could be one of those American similar round grills. So what you would do, you could actually use charcoal, and you could add something like juniper or branches of oak or something to it. So you need heat, but you also need smoke. And then you just put the herring into the grill, and then you let it cook in the hot smoke. What's really good, if you have the time, is to take the herring out of the refrigerator a while before you put it into the grill, because otherwise the cold fish will cool down the grill. So it's nice if you have it room temperature. For this recipe, you'll also need a little bit of salt. So What I do is when I've lined the fish up in the grill, let the smoke coming, I put a little bit of salt on top, and I serve the hot smoked herring with clams and carrots. So when the fish, depending on the size of the herring, it could be like approximately 15 to 20 minutes, depending on the smoke. If it's not done, you can just leave it in the grill until it falls off its bone. And then during that time, you just cook clams, or you could cook mussels with it as well. Just cook them regularly, like a moule with some white wine and some onions. And then sometimes I can put some vegetables in there, maybe carrots or cauliflower as well. And then you serve the cooked clams with the hot smoked herring. It's so good. It's one of the favorite things right now, actually, in the fall time. So that's my recipe, hot smoked herring with clams.
Niklas Ekstedt from Sweden there. And that's all for this edition of The Menu. For previous episodes of this program, go to Monocle's website, SoundCloud or Apple Podcasts. And remember to subscribe to the show so that it automatically arrives onto your device every week. This show was edited and mixed by David Stevens, and I am Markus Hippi. Once again, we finish this program with a dinner soundtrack recommendation. This is Naked by Jonas Blue and Max. Thanks for listening and Happy New Year.
Silhouette send me off like a trigger. Goddamn, I'm the man when I'm with her. Yeah. Think I follow.